When we started writing our thoughts down on paper, it opened up endless possibilities. Ideas could grow beyond the borders of the mind, and it changed the world. Somewhere along the way, we lost touch with paper, distracted by devices made for every purpose except for thinking and focus. On edge, waiting for the next notification. But what if new technology didn't pull us away from paper, but brought us closer to it? Listen. That's not paper. It's the sound of the new Remarkable Paper Pro, rewriting the future. A paper tablet with a true color ink display, gentle reading light, and unheard of tactility. With digital features for taking notes, thinking, and organizing, without any distractions. Paper is about to change the world again. Get your paper tablet at remarkable.com today.
This Father's Day at Lowe's, score free gifts for the greatest dad. Right now, get a free Blackstone 8-piece accessory kit when you buy a Blackstone 28-inch griddle. Plus, get two free select Craftsman V20 tools when you buy an RP brushless drill and impact driver combo kit. Shop these deals and more this Father's Day at Lowe's. We help, you save. Valid through 6/15 while supplies last. Selection varies by location.
Anyone lived in a pretty how town, up so floating many bells down. Spring, summer, autumn, winter, he sang his, didn't he danced his did. Woman and men, both little and small, cared for anyone, not at all. They slowed there, isn't they reaped their same?
Sun, moon, stars, the rain.
My summer job is giving tours of the woods and trails just outside my hometown of Older Hills, New Jersey. So far, it has been a nice job to have right before starting college. The pay is good. Appreciative customers often give me tips, which I am allowed to keep. And I love being outdoors. I'm a small, pretty girl. And often people express surprise that I'm willing to go out into the woods alone, even in broad daylight, with total strangers. Maybe it's just the carelessness of youth. My routine is simple. I stand in the main parking lot of the Older Hills Woods Reservation, wearing khakis, hiking boots, and a maroon Older Hills Parks Department polo shirt. I carry a clipboard. But the clipboard is really for show, since I keep all the forms, maps, and information I might need stored in my phone. My boss has me carry the clipboard because he says studies show that clipboards let people know you're somewhere in an official capacity. My boss is a smart cookie. Whenever I think of Older Hills, I think of that E.E. Cummings poem, Anyone Lived in a Pretty How Town. Older Hills is a pretty how town, full of old money and old mansions with big emerald green lawns, and the woods outside town are full of history and romance and mystery. I love spending time in them and leading others through them. Last week, a group of three guys pulled up in a monstrously huge jet black F-250 truck with Texas plates that squealed to a stop, taking up 1.5 parking spaces. I started to go over there and yell at them to move it, but when they got out of the truck, I thought better of it. All three were big dudes, and they kinda just gave off a vibe. The three guys were all dressed in shorts and t-shirts. Two of the three had Texas A&M shirts on, so I guess that's where they went to school. The third guy had an eagle clutching an American flag and his talons on his shirt. All three had trucker hats. One of them belched. The other two followed suit. I glanced half a dozen crushed beer cans in the truck while the doors were open. Expensive truck. Expensive college. Trying too hard to look like good old boys. I could smell the Axe body spray 10 feet away. frat boys, I thought. This will be good practice for going to frat parties, I told myself, trying to look on the bright side. To tell the truth, though, I was starting to get the jitters. There was something off about these guys. The biggest guy, in particular, who I could already tell was their ringleader, had eyes that seemed a little cruel and wild.
"Sup, baby?"
said the shortest and fattest of the three, giving me a wink. A million memes danced in my mind. I stifled a smirk. "Hey there," I said to the tall guy and smiled, just to piss the short guy off. "Would you like a tour of the woods? It's only $10 and the woods are really gorgeous." The tall guy smirked. "So you're asking if we would be willing to pay $10 to go out in the woods with a pretty little lady? Well, shit, yeah we are." Then he laughed and winked. "I'm only joking with you. What I meant to say is we'd love a tour of these woods, and $10 is a bargain." The middle guy, the guy in the flag shirt, spit tobacco on the ground. Super charming, he wiped his lips and the back of his hand. "Shit, I can't even get a can of Skull in the fucking East Coast for $10. $10 for a little natural beauty can't go wrong there." He said, "East Coast," like it made him want to throw up in his mouth. But I ignored that and said, "Okay, well, we can get started right away. My name is Cordy, by the way." The tall one did the talking for all three of them. I imagine he usually did. "I'm Tex. This little turd blossom here. Talking, his name is Haas. That fat guy there is Jimbo." Tex, Haas, and Jimbo. Of course. Tex, Haas, and Jimbo strutted back to the truck and hauled out three backpacks. I was not at all surprised and noticed the truck had a Sigma Chi fraternity decal on it. I'd already heard plenty of stories from friends who had gone off to college. "Do we pay you now or when we get back?" asked Tex, casually pulling a wad of 20s and 50s from his pants. "Hey now, Tex, don't flash a roll like that, someone might try to rob you," said Jimbo. "Shit," said Tex, "I give up this roll over their dead body." All three laughed. "We can take care of all that when we get back," I said. "If you're not satisfied, I don't like the charge. We're pretty friendly and unofficial here, and we aim to please." "I'm sure we're going to be satisfied," said Haas. "I mean, you seem like you're real good people." I definitely had the jitters and the heebie-jeebies, but I also felt like I had a job to do, and I had to prove that I was capable of doing it. I guess that's why I decided to press on ahead despite my trepidation. "Well," I said, "follow me. Hey, you guys are Sig Cheese? I hear you throw some kick-ass parties." "Yeah," said Haas, walking behind me as we made our way into the woods. "You haven't lived until you've lived through Derby Day's weekend." "Yup, yup," Tex agreed. "Cool, cool. I start Mass next semester, and I'm pretty sure there's a chapter." "Yeah," said Jimbo. "Mass hole's pretty hard. But, for East Coast pussies." The three high-fived, about 500 steps in, and it already felt like the longest tour of the summer. I decided to take the three frat boys on a Storm King Hill, which is a challenging but absolutely gorgeous hike that takes hikers past and sometimes through absolutely gorgeous flora and also offers a fair chance of spotting a red fox or some deer. Bears are on occasionally a risk in the woods, but I like the old joke say, if worse comes to worse, I didn't have to outrun the bear, I just have to outrun the three Texans. Probably just Jimbo. A voice in my head then asked, "What if you have to outrun three Texans?" It was a warm, overcast day, threatening rain, and none of the trails were very busy. The Storm King Trail in particular, which is our most challenging, but almost most beautiful, hike was deserted, except for the Texans and me. Tex, Haas, and Jimbo began to linger together, whispering back and forth, 15 or 20 feet behind me, and it was starting to make me a little uneasy. "Hey guys," I said, "would you please try to keep up? It would make me feel a little bit better if we all stayed together." They did scurry to catch up with me as we hiked the muddy trails and took in the sights. But Jimbo commented, "I bet a pretty lady like you could get into all kinds of trouble up here in the great outdoors, huh?" I tried not to show how this vaguely veiled threat made me feel, so I just smirked at him. "I'll bet Texans can get in some pretty good trouble anywhere, huh, Jimbo?" That made Haas and Tex hoot and holler, and Jimbo joined in. We were a few miles into the hike, and had been hiking steadily uphill for some time, when Jimbo stopped, took out his backpack, and opened it up. He withdrew 40-ounce bottles of Budweiser and started handing them out. "You know, you guys really aren't supposed to be drinking out here," I protested meekly. "And just what are you gonna do about it?" asked Jimbo, with an edge in his voice. I could feel the mood starting to pivot, almost imperceptibly, from "aw shucks, it's all good fun" to something a little more sinister. I decided I was in no position to push the issue right now, so I just shrugged and said, "If anything too serious happened, I would just call park security." "And are y'all gonna call security just because some good old boys wanna wet their whistles?" asked Tex. I laughed. "Nah, I don't drink beer or I'd have one myself. You don't have any wine coolers in your bag, do you, Jimbo?" He grinned a beefy, ruddy-faced grin. "Sorry, fresh out." "Oh well," I sighed. "Think y'all can keep up while drinking your beer?" "Shit," said Haas. "I was an all-state running back in high school and drunk every damn down." "Only thing you were all-state in was pulling your pud," said Tex with a laugh. Haas looked downright huffy and muttered something under his breath. We had hiked another mile or so, and we were almost to the part of the woods that I wanted to show them. There is a beautiful clearing with an idyllic, bucolic, little pond that usually fool frogs and turtles this time of year. It is hard to find. You have to do a little bushwhacking and also do a little bit of rock climbing. And as far as I know, I'm the only person who has ever found it. I know it probably sounds careless. I was just asking for trouble, leading three rowdy frat boys to a clearing deep in the woods. But I just felt like there was something so magical about the place that I'd be safe once they saw it. Still, I was a little jittery when I said, "You boys want to do a little bushwhacking now? See something really cool?" They hooted and hollered. "Sure thing, I'm always down for a little bushwhacking," said Jimbo, predictably enough. I sighed and picked up a big stick and started clearing heavy, droopy tree limbs out of the way. "Be careful," I added. "Some of these plants have thorns that hurt like hell." After beating our way through thick vegetation, we had to scamper up a small, craggy embankment. Haas must have lost his grip at one point because I heard him yell, "Son of a bitch, I cut my fucking hand!" "Does it hurt?" laughed Jimbo. "Hurts like eight bitches on a bitch boat, you fucking bitch!" "Boys, watch your language," I giggled, "or I won't show you my favorite spot in the woods." I saw the three of them exchange sly, mean glances. I got a serious case of the jitters again. Suddenly, I saw Jimbo reach into his backpack and pull out a roll of duct tape. "What are you going to do with that?" I yelled. Tex said, "Well, Cordy, we already wet our whistles. Now we're going to wet our fucking dicks. And out here is pretty far. I'm pretty sure nobody can hear you scream." "Leading us out here. Don't even try to tell you she didn't want this, bitch," added Jimbo thoughtfully. Haas wasn't saying anything, just staring at me like a wild predator, which I guess is exactly what he was. I took off running in the direction of the clearing. Tex laughed. "Oh, you'd better do it over there if it's your favorite spot. Well, I'm fine with that. Let's make this shit romantic, boys." And suddenly, the three of them were hot on my heels. I slipped in the mud, and Tex, surprisingly fast despite his girth, had his filthy little fingers on one of my belt loops, and he yanked hard, but I got away. I kept running as hard as I could toward the circle of the trees and surrounded the clearing. Someone else, Haas, I realized, was so close to me that I could feel his breath on the back of my neck. Never mind the jitters, my whole adrenal system was tweaked, and I could taste the taste of battery acid and bile in my throat. I slipped free of another pair of hands, and this time I didn't bother looking back to see who they belonged to. I felt desperate, like a hunted animal, running so hard that I felt that my heartbeat was going through my chest. I ran into the clearing. I think Haas must have been the first one to notice my boss. Haas's eyes got big, like when someone saw something scary in one of those old cartoons, and he tried to stop and run the other way, but the ground in the clearing was so slippery, he just fell on his ass. By then, Jimbo and Tex had also looked up and seen my boss and some of his assistants, but it was much too late by then. I do wonder what they thought when they saw a 7-foot-tall man, shaped thing with the head of a stag and the torso of a man, and a big, muscular, sinewy goat legs. My boss has big brawny arms and always carries an axe, and he's very theatrical about his kills. His assistants, devotees really, who look just like him, only a little smaller and a little less majestic, they prefer to use daggers. In a matter of moments, the fight was over and the frat boys died screaming. The rest of the clearing was, as always, peaceful and placid. The very image of the prolepsarian bliss. A frog hopped into the pond and made a splash while one of the stag's headed goats, underlings, ripped off the hoss's right arm and began to munch on it serenely. My boss is a smart cookie. He knows. Nobody would question that a college girl standing around in a polo shirt and holding a clipboard must be an official of some kind. Never mind that Older Hills is such a rich place and too full of money to do anything so common as offer guides through the goddamn woods. The only things that older parks and recs departments really cares about is annual cocktails galas in the park. No matter how many times I lead sacrificial victims to their doom in this enchanted and hallowed space, I always get so jittery. It is such a thrill to serve a powerful, virile, laughing god. The compensation is so amazing, but most of the thing I do is for the awe. My boss says that I'm the best guide he has ever had. Hell, not just my boss, my god. An hour later, it was all over but the feasting.
You served me well, as always.
My boss beamed at me while he munched languidly on Tex's brain. The clearing was strewn with body parts and blood and viscera. Someone's liver was strung up on a yew tree and some crows had already begun nibbling on it. A camo hat and a MAGA hat, smeared with blood and dotted with bits of scalp, were dangling from the limbs on trees down by the lake, and someone's hiking boot, with the foot still inside and oozing blood, had caught the attention of some more crows, who were pecking greedily. I saw one of them pull a big chunk of something out of the boot and then fly off and enjoy his prize. One of the stag-headed god's devotees had ripped the skin off Jimbo's face and eaten it like string cheese, and was now playing with his big fat skull, pretending to make it talk.
"Well, howdy, little lady," he said in a perfect Texas drawl that made me giggle.
I took Texas roll of 20s and put it in my backpack. The tips are my favorite part of the job, I tell you what. Older Hills is such an opulent, pretty hell town. And yet, just a few miles outside town, deep in the forest, a ritual such savage and primal pandemonium is the law of the land. Sometimes, I think about what a contradiction this is. But the thing is, I believe that many of the first families of Older Hills have a bone-deep understanding that there is something that lives out here in the woods, and that as long as he stays healthy and happy, the town also stays healthy and happy. The stag-headed god is so old and so strong, older than Older Hills, and I believe that is why no one ever questions why so many people go out into the woods with a high school girl pretending to be their guide, and never, ever are heard from again. Pretty how towns know how to keep their secrets.
You've done it again, finance teams. You closed the books, and it went fine. Sure, some expenses were missing receipts, but that's fine. Stayed late to process invoices by hand. It's all fine. But don't you deserve better than fine? With Ramp, expenses are submitted with a text, invoices are coded automatically, and everything is connected to your accounting system so you can close the books without all the busy work. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again.
I've been with the Park Rangers in Alaska for about 30 years. I'm getting ready to retire in a few months' time. Alaska is an amazingly beautiful state. In many ways, it is far different from the rest of the United States. There is a lot more wilderness and things that are still quite wild. Nature is much more prevalent and things are a lot more rural. If you've ever wanted to live in a place without a lot of neighbors, Alaska has plenty of places just for you. Anyway, my story starts in 1996. We got a call about a missing person. Now, we get the occasional missing person, and that's not unusual by any means, especially out in the wilds of Alaska. But this was a bit more pressing as the missing person wasn't an Alaskan residence. The person was a woman who was supposed to have come to visit some family. They were due out a week prior to return, but the family hadn't heard from her. I reassured the woman that there was a strong chance she was probably already back, but she hadn't checked in. Considering this was a younger woman, I thought maybe she was just enjoying her freedom, so to speak, as that wasn't very uncommon. Still, I told her we'd take things into consideration and we would look into things and let her know what we found. The first thing I did was head over and check in with the family this woman was supposed to be visiting. I was quite of the belief that the missing woman had already headed out of Alaska and gone back to New York, where she lived. But I figured I should just check anyway, as if it were my kid, I want to know where their whereabouts were as well. It took some time to get where I was headed, as travel isn't always the most convenient out here in Alaska. Upon my arrival, I knocked on the door of this girl's aunt and explained the situation. I asked some simple questions, and it was then I grew a little bit more worried than I'd initially been. This girl's aunt was very welcoming and gracious, and while I was appreciative of this, she informed me quickly that she hadn't seen her niece since she left a week ago to go back home. I had a cup of coffee and thanked the woman before reassuring her I'd check in with the pilot who flew her out, and I'd get back to her. It wasn't long before I headed that way. While I was a bit more worried, I fully expected to hear from the pilot, and they'd flown her out to the nearest airport outside of Alaska. It was all okay. This theory was great and all except for one thing. Upon heading to where this pilot lived, I found something quite suspicious. A door covered in red. I'm not talking painted red. I'm talking a blood spray sort of red. I pounded on the door and announced myself several times, but I got no answer. I peeked around the residence and found what looked like to be more blood. I began following the trail, and there were points where I saw claw marks dug into the side of the cabin this pilot lived in. Eventually, I happened upon a broken window around the back. I took my flashlight and looked inside a bit and noticed there was blood absolutely everywhere. It was at this point I called the nearest authorities. I explained everything to them, and it was here the real investigation began. Inside the cabin was a horrid smell. The authorities had found bits and pieces of this pilot throughout the cabin. A head there, an arm here, blood and entrails just about everywhere. It was sickening, to say the least. It was possible the girl had been in the area, but it had been too long to know for sure. I decided to head back to the airstrip the pilot would have flown out from, and found almost nothing to identify what had happened or if the girl had ever even been there. My initial thought was she had to have been there. Still, there wasn't much to go on and the trail was fairly non-existent. Having nothing much to go on, I headed back to my own station and informed all the family members of the goings-ons. Mostly, we'd continue searching and that it appeared that she was indeed missing. I obviously didn't let them know the details of the pilot or anything they didn't need to know. A day turned to a week, which was a month later, and we hadn't really found anything. There was nothing on what had happened to the girl or why the pilot had been mauled or by what. Most of the law enforcement seemed to assume it was a wild animal, but I didn't think as much. I'd never seen a wild animal force its way into someone's home and then just proceed to eviscerate them completely. Sure, sometimes you'll get a wild animal that gets a little too wild, but the level of which the person has been massacred didn't make much sense. Also, it didn't seem like whatever mauled the pilot ate anything. The person was in pieces, sure, but if it were an animal, you'd think it would have feasted on some of it, if not all of it. Also, the claw marks were deep, and none of them seemed to match any kind of animal we had here in Alaska. The eeriest part of all of this was that whatever attacked the pilot seemed to have done so with intelligence and almost cold calculation. There are plenty of smart animals out there, but the pilot was able to get their gun off to fire several shots in the process somehow. Whatever attacked him had somehow avoided these things. You'd have to be pretty fast to do something like that. I don't know a human or an animal that could avoid being shot at that close of range and get close enough to rip someone to pieces while that person is firing a shotgun right in front of them. Not a single part of this sat well with me, but there wasn't much I was able to do because I had little to nothing to go on. Looking back now, I wish this would have just been the end, honestly. I mean, no disrespect to the family or the girl or the pilot, but what happened next was more than I could have ever bargained for, if you catch my drift. I was home one night, about a couple of months after the investigation, when I heard a faint call for help. I was in my chair, fire going and doors locked. Because of the nature of the snow that was falling, I initially thought the wind was playing tricks on my mind, as it was storming pretty hard out there. This quickly changed upon the sound of a loud pounding on my door. I jumped, nearly spilling my hot cocoa all over myself, and I quickly shouted a few obscenities before grabbing my gun and asking who was there. I heard nothing in response, and I decided to check what could be out on the other side of that peephole. It was then I was shocked to see a blonde girl in her 20s covered in blood, crying outside my door. I quickly unlocked my door and swung it open, looking to help this girl, but upon opening the door, I saw no one. I was thrown off by this, especially when I shut the door, locked it again, took two steps before the pounding started again. I looked at the peephole again, but as I did, my power died for a moment. I felt shaky, and I couldn't see the best. I swore for a moment I heard the sound of faint sniffling and crying, but it was only for a second when the power came back on. This was normal, the blizzard being what it was. The thing that wasn't normal, however, was what happened next. I heard persistent knocking like something was blowing in the wind at my door. This was quite different from the pounding I had heard initially. Looking through the peephole, I saw a rope. Inside this rope was a bloody trash bag. I flipped out and called the police. The entire time I waited, I could hear the bag hitting the door. When law enforcement arrived, they found remains of a woman. It matched the idea of that missing woman that we were investigating. This poor girl had been torn to pieces. It looked like someone had ripped her spine out of her body and had a grand old time tearing the rest of her body piece by piece. This wasn't natural and it wasn't normal. I was shaken, to say the least. Something was out there and it left me this girl, which meant it knew where I lived and that I had looked into the disappearances. The next few nights I had were sleepless. Part of this was from the guilt of the way this girl was found, and part of this was from the horror of that same thing. What little sleep I did get came with nightmares and disturbing chantings inside my mind. I'd hear several minutes upon waking. In time, this slowly stopped. It was a year later before things got really strange again. I'd somewhat moved on from the previous year's events, as much as anyone could after something like that. When I got a call to the station, it was something crying and trying to speak, but it was breaking up quite a bit. After several attempts to calm this person down, the line died, abruptly. I decided to check around at the phone stations around the park and see if I could find anything. It was around the time I hit one of our most remote stations that I knew something was up. I found a blood-soaked handprint that seemed to streak. The phone line had been ripped out in the phone, and there was a trail of blood that led deeper into the woods. I called law enforcement and gave them my location before slowly making my way, gun in hand, down the blood-soaked snow trail. It wasn't long before I found myself face to face with a fresh body, or half of one, that is. A man was pinned to a tree by a branch that was driven through its mouth. His top half was... it was there, but where his bottom half should have been, there was only blood and some of his insides, which were steaming in the snow. It was here I stopped and waited for the authorities to arrive. I wasn't even slightly comfortable at this point, and I quite honestly wanted nothing to do with the continuing of this investigation. I didn't exactly have a choice, however, as this happened at my park and I was beginning to think it was done intentionally. Afraid for my life, I didn't dare move an inch till the police arrived. I told them everything I had found and what little I knew, and they eventually found the rest of the man a mile away. I went home and tried to sleep, but I didn't get much at all. I called in and took some time off, which was easy to do since I was the lead at the station. During my time off, I'd get strange nightly phone calls. The first time, it was the voice of the man who'd called me right before his death. I still get chills thinking about how the voice sounded exactly like the man. I swore it was his dying moments replayed again. The thing is, though, an audio recording back then would have been obvious. This was no audio recording. It was either the dead man's ghost or something that mimicked his last moments perfectly. The second night I got a call, and it was just snickering on the other line. I threatened to call law enforcement and told whoever was on the other end of this line exactly what they could do to themselves if they catch my drift. Night three was several varying phone calls from 2 to 4 in the morning. They were all different and all on the hour. One was a woman crying. The 3 a.m. call was a child asking for his mother over and over again, and the final call of the night was a repeat of the man who'd been mauled at our park. I called the authorities, but they couldn't do much about it. The fourth night was an almost demonic or extremely warped voice. I couldn't understand it at all. And night five was someone whispering, "I see you," before hanging up. This call really unnerved me. The reason being was the strange wailing that came from outside my window after it happened. I peeked out the curtains and saw nothing, but I was uncomfortable the remainder of the night. I'd even taken to recording the calls so I could share them with law enforcement. Again, there was nothing they could really do about it. Night 6's call was an older woman begging for help and screaming at what sounded like her slowly being murdered, and night 7 was just heavy breathing. As tired as I wanted to get back to somewhat of a normal routine after this, and went back to work the next morning. I was convinced at this point that something was stalking me. I thought it'd be the best to take advantage of this knowledge to set up traps of sorts, assuming I could catch whatever it was. I clocked out at the end of the workday and locked up. I then proceeded to wait at my station. I wasn't going to go home. I figured if something was stalking me, I'd meet it here, at my work. So, I loaded up my shotgun and my Magnum and proceeded to wait. It was about 11-ish when I heard a loud pounding at my station door. I asked who was there, and it was then I heard laughter from behind me. I looked and saw blood on the window. The shape looked like a 3-fingered hand. This was followed by a large thud on the roof above me. I cautiously sat down and waited. I wasn't looking to be baited out. I wouldn't need to be... However, as I heard a loud smack hit the station window, it was a bloody trash bag that sat outside the window. This was followed by another which slammed the window again, and then another, and then another, and then another. And then, on the other side of the bloody handprint, I saw something that I'll never forget. Then, a final smack on the window. I saw a crack in the glass before hearing the loudest and most disturbing screaming I've ever heard in my life. I wish I had the words to describe it, but There is no way to describe what it was I heard. I tried my phone, keeping a close eye on the windows as I heard a slow scratching behind me on the outside of the station. Unfortunately for me, whatever was doing this killed the phone lines. The slow, clawing made its way around the station and soon hit the window on the glass. I couldn't tell what it was in the darkness, but I could see the marks it was making in the glass. I raised my shotgun, and the moment I did it, it stopped. Everything fell silent except for the snow and the wind that blew it. I heard a crashing sound behind me and spun around, firing off shots, but finding nothing. It was as I was reloading that I heard the glass shatter behind me. Burst would be a better description, as it flew inwards as pieces of glass cut my skin. I fell to the ground and got up before firing a few more shots into the darkness. I heard nothing, and my adrenaline had me on edge as I was shaking. I wasn't shaking from the cold, I was shaking from pure fear. I heard a woman's laughter and then a man's crying. These sounds circled me and I kept an eye out. Whatever was there remained in the shadows. I was even more afraid now as I wasn't sure where this thing was. Were the voices, the crying, all of it real, or was it something inside my mind? I knew whatever it was, this thing was creating it. I heard that same inhuman scream behind me, at which point I spun around and fired off every round I had left in my shotgun before immediately pulling my magnum out. There was a burst of disturbingly terrifying laughter that followed all of this. I've never heard anything so horrific in my entire lifetime. Things fell silent before a loud scream rang out ahead of me. I fired off a few shots and ran out the destroyed window in the direction of the screams. I didn't care if I died at this point. I just wanted it all to be over. I was sick of the sleepless nights and this thing toying with me, and so I fired as I ran until I heard clicking. I then reloaded as fast as my fingers would let me and shakily spun around in the snow, positive I was going to die at any moment. It was there I stood, shaking and crying until the sun came up. One of my coworkers arrived early for their shift and stood in shock at what they saw. They came to me and consoled me before driving out and finding a working phone. They called the police and I remember being in shambles. My mind was broken and I was afraid for my life. The worst part of it all was I never saw this thing. I gave the authorities my information and immediately took what I had in savings and moved away. My coworkers were able to help me find a transfer, and I now reside in California, where I'm getting ready to retire completely. Never found out what was going on, or what that thing was, or anything else in relation to it. I left the second I was able to, and I haven't been bothered by the thing since. Or whatever it was. I imagine it is native to Alaska. I have no clue what this thing was or how anyone is supposed to kill it, but I'm positive it is still out there somewhere, killing.